I want you to know that I support you strongly to finish the term. To finish the term in the position and the economy that you inherited and so courageously took on.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. The voice you just heard was Ralph Profeta, local Democratic district leader, speaking at yesterday's budget meeting in support of Governor David Paterson. Paterson isn't on the list of local politicians who you might think are likely to receive a standing ovation these days, but there was the governor. There he was, getting a welcome reception at a town hall on the state budget in Brooklyn yesterday. That's right, lots of applause. As you heard, Paterson trying to deflect the daily questions about his political future and refocus the story on the state's fiscal future. And if we take the governor at his word that he's not stepping down any time soon, then we too will go beyond the speculation and give this moment in New York politics some much-needed context. WNYC's Bob Henley is just the man to help us do that. He's been tracking the governor for the station, and he's done some very impressive reporting on the rocky history of the New York State Police, who seem to be involved in every recent scandal the state has seen. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Gives a whole new meaning to the phrase executive protection.
That's right. And listeners, we can take your calls, too. What's your assessment of the state of the state, the state of the governorship, the state of the state police? In particular, what about Paterson's supporters? Can you make a case for why you think he's the right man to tackle the budget process right now? Or anyone else, give us your state of the state. 212-433-WMYC, 212-433-9692, or post your comments to our webpage, WMYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. Now, before we get to your reporting on the state police, right, Bob, tell us a little bit about how you see this moment. Is this minute-by-minute speculation about whether he's going to step down or not subsiding as Paterson tries to focus on the budget?
I think that there are two compelling narratives which require our simultaneous attention, which is tough to do in the age of attention deficit disorder. If we get a noun, verb, direct object in 14 seconds, we're a genius. The circumstance right now is that the state is in an unprecedented economic crisis, and we're in the midst of renegotiating the social contract because the state has to cut what is equivalent to more than 10% of its operating budget. And in times of prosperity in the whole World War II era, post-World War II era, we've expanded the services we count on for senior citizens. And this gets very complicated. We count on having a place to take our elderly relative so we can go to work, so that we can make money, so that we can pay tuition for the kids. So we've come to rely on this vast government network that acts as a support, whether it be Medicaid, whether it be child care. And so now the government at the state level is having to say, we have to cut this off. This is happening across the country exactly at the same time that the president, President Obama, is looking towards 2010 and is feeling he needs to be a budget hawk. And there's a certain concern that maybe the stimulus spigot's being turned off. Meanwhile, we have the compelling story of Governor Paterson. And every day there's another story in the tabloids. The Times kind of led up today, but it is no doubt there are several investigations that are ongoing, and it can't help but to hurt his advancing the state's agenda.
A little something for everyone. Well, does Governor Paterson have a real path to taking control of the budget? For those of us who want to focus on the substantive issues, it's one thing to be convinced of your innocence, but it's another thing to convince a legislative body to go along with you on some budget proposals that were pretty unpopular even before you found yourself in hot water with the tabloids.
Well, to get a sense of how emergent the issue is, we not only have the long-term structural deficit question, which is like $9 billion next year and $60 billion over the next 5 years, we have a very real cash crunch right now. The state has to come up with $2 billion by the end of the month to make good on local municipality payments and on Medicaid payments. The governor is suggesting holding off on payment out of the income tax, state income tax refund checks, which would only get about $500 million. Today, the assembly is expected to pass a bill that would try to prevent him from doing that. So that's a kind of day-by-day thing that's going on here. And it's funny, when you get outside of the pundit class and ask average New Yorkers how they feel, they don't begrudge the governor tickets to Yankee Stadium. They saw Mayor Giuliani's constant presence at Yankee Stadium. This is the trappings. If you're going to be governor, you should get tickets to the Yankees. On the other hand, the question about domestic violence and those kinds of things, those know them. But they are really concerned about things like, I don't want to see him delay my income tax refund check. I'm counting on that. Mm-hmm. Yesterday at that town hall meeting, there were voices of people who are actually homeless, who have been homeless for a number of years, directly pleading to the governor for help. So that's why I think the media has a problem, because we are trying to focus on the pageantry and the excitement of the drama of Governor Patterson. Meanwhile, this implosion that's happening in the social service net is equally a compelling story, not more so.
Let's take a call from Evelyn, who's on the west side of Manhattan and has a strong opinion about Governor Patterson. Evelyn, you're on with Bob Henley on WNYC.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Well, I happen to feel that I feel that from the minute he walked into that office, for some reason, the legislature and everybody else was out to get him. For some reason, I have no idea why. And he's one of the few honest people there. I mean, he's been saying all along, we have to, you know, make sacrifices for the budget. We have to cut this or that. Nobody wants to cut anything. Even when he said he would take a cut in his own salary, they were screaming, oh, that's nothing. That doesn't mean anything. I mean, no matter what he has suggested, no matter what he has tried, they have all been screaming, you know, it's no good. And I honestly think that for some strange reason, they just didn't want him from the minute he walked into that office. Mm. But I think he's absolutely should stay for the rest of the term.
Well, there's a Patterson supporter, Evelyn, on the west side. Again, the number's 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, if you want to give us your state of the state. And we do have to remember, Bob, Governor Patterson never asked for this job. And now there's another man who has not asked for this job, Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch, who may be forced to take the lead. When Patterson initially announced that he was not resigning, there were those who said he should step aside from the budget process and let Ravitch take the lead. Now, that hasn't formally happened. But is there any sense of whether Ravitch's role has increased behind the scenes?
Well, the only thing we have seen is developing an expectation that Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch would come up with a kind of universal resolution of the structural deficit, which is $60 billion over the next 5 years. And so the thought was he was going to come forward with something like the workout strategy that happened to save the city in the 70s. The stuff that's been leaked out in the press didn't get great marks because it talked about kind of a structured borrowing going into the future with not enough detail. And I understand that Lieutenant Governor Ravitch, as such, doesn't have a press person. So he's reliant still, to a large degree, except for the people he calls personally, on the governor's staff to get his message out. There was an expectation he'd have this out last week. It hasn't come out yet. It's being described by anonymous sources. So in essence, speculation is getting out ahead of the actual product. That's not a good sign.
Patterson no longer has a press person either, does he?
Well, he does. He has. There are
press
a number
staff.
Of people.
He
press
no
staff.
Longer has a spokesman.
Right. And that was, we saw that last week when Kaufman stepped down.
All right. Now let's talk about the traditional black leadership. Are they rallying around Patterson or not?
Well, there's a couple of schools of thought. We saw Reverend Sharpton up at Sylvia's in two separate events where they basically supported Governor Patterson to hold on to his term. We also have the more, I would say, activist, cutting-edge support, which is Councilman Barron, who is now calling into question whether or not Attorney General Cuomo is the person to be doing this investigation. And he makes an argument that because of the fact that Cuomo is the presumptive Democratic nominee for governor and a major political force, that he can't bring the objectivity to this that, say, an independent prosecutor might. And, of course, there are legal experts who say, listen, since Patterson has stepped down as a candidate, there isn't a conflict.
And Cuomo has not officially announced.
But exactly. But in Barron, you have somebody willing to go to the barricades who is very skilled at using the media, willing to – and it's funny because yesterday Patterson had to listen to Barron take him on for Patterson's reluctance to continue to go after the super wealthy in terms of taxes. So it's not that Barron's giving up his traditional very aggressive stance towards taxing the wealthy, but he is standing behind the governor in an aggressive way in the street, which is really, I think, helping to galvanize this kind of support for the governor.
What about this related issue of the timing of the Cuomo investigation? Keith Wright, Assemblyman Keith Wright, who said yesterday on the program that he wants Attorney General Cuomo's investigation completed by the end of the month. That's when the budget is due. How does all of that tie together?
Well, of course, and the problem is that there are multiple investigations, and we need to parse through this for people to keep track of it.
Because for me, too, parse through it for us, Bob.
We have the Aqueduct Racino investigation with the Inspector General and some element of the U.S. Attorney's Office looking into that deal. That was the controversial deal that gave the opportunity to a local consortium to develop Aqueduct as a Racino, which included, in some minimal role, the Reverend Floyd Flake, who was very influential power broker, who had met with Governor Patterson and who at one point had been contemplated as an early supporter for Cuomo. There's that. Then you have the Ethics Commission referral about the Yankee tickets that is gone up to District Attorney Soares up in Albany County and also to the Attorney General's office. Then we have the investigation that Patterson requested himself, which is of how his administration handled a domestic violence charge brought against David Johnson, one of his closest aides, who has since been discharged. But so you see this whole thing. And then behind the scenes, of course, Patterson is talking to his criminal defense attorney, Ted Wells, and no doubt they're having conversations about where his liability is, what is it that they have, what don't they have. And so that is the mosaic, and we haven't even talked about the budget yet.
All right, let's take Scott in Queens. Scott, you're on WNYC.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Actually, I wanted to sort of echo a statement that, and I believe a lady called Evelyn had stated before. That
yes, Evelyn on the west side called earlier.
Yeah, I heard a message, her statement. Because once you stepped in, I mean, in reality, if people could, as you stated before, parse between personal and public, he's doing a lot of things that have a lot of initiatives to improve the city. I mean, once you start talking about campaign finance reform, you know, term limits, I mean, he basically just cut away at the safety net. I mean, this is probably, and he gave
you mean the political safety net,
you know, enough ammunition for him to fall on his own sword. Not to mention that his camp has not supported him. Whoever he has in his circle has done him a huge disservice from the minute he stepped in, from the way he presents in public to how he answers questions in the media. He has not been coached at all. Well, that's pretty much my statement.
Scott, thank you for your call. Go ahead, Bob.
There's a couple of things. I had the opportunity to spend a day with him, it seems like a million years ago, back in December. And there is a real record of accomplishment that Governor Patterson has in the 2 years he's been in. Tier 5 pension reform, getting the folks that are paying in the future as public employees to pay more of it to reduce the long-term costs of carrying public employees. The reform of Rockefeller drug laws, something that was kicking around Albany for a couple of decades. Independent authority reform. These are these anonymous utilities and authorities that run the world that were pretty much a shadow government, thanks to the work of Brodsky and of course, Governor Patterson came in. You have a situation where that was turned around. That was signed into law. The problem is he had some good coaching early on. Reverend O'Byrne, who was a former Jesuit who was very much guiding him early on, he kind of fell away over tax problems. And you may remember in the very beginning, Patterson was able to get national attention on the problem with AIG. And he was the most sought-after interview on the subject of public finance and the looming disaster with Wall Street and the implications for states across the country. About 60 days into that, he lost control of his message, and his inner circle got smaller and smaller. And I think the caller has a point in the sense that he was no longer able to project his message but was constantly on the defensive.
Let's take John in Westchester. John, you're on WNYC with Bob Henley.
Hi. I think that during that message that he was giving yesterday, to me, couldn't have come at a better time, because now that he's not going to run, He's not beholden to anybody, and he just has to make things right. And he has no interest other than to balance the budget.
I like the not beholden to anyone point. Long as he doesn't have to step down,
he can
actually get something
done. Except the several prosecutors that are interviewing. I mean, that's the other thing that you have to work out here. I mean, I'm sure he's a multitasker, but I think that the other issue here is that, you know, he has a constant steady drumbeat in the press about these investigations that come from anonymous sources. And I think he did himself a world of good by going to a church on Sunday. And from the reporting that I saw, there was a kind of spontaneous cohesion around him. New Yorkers like the underdog. But that being said, you know, we are always just another news cycle away from another disclosure.
Yeah, yeah. And here is we've gotten several calls of support, but here's an interesting comment from our comments page, Peter, who writes, "It is interesting that many New York African-American leaders have shown support for Governor Patterson, but I have not heard the same support for the African-American woman who was beaten. It almost feels like some African-American leaders are suggesting by their actions that, quote, this is a black thing, stay out of it. If that is the case, it strikes me as very sad for the woman who was beaten." It's an interesting point. We're going to have an author on in the next hour about the black experience, challenging the myth of black inferiority, and it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say. But we know that women's groups have come out on the other side of this issue.
Exactly, and they've, you know, wanted him to step, Governor Patterson to step down. Ironically, Governor Patterson, from a public policy standpoint, had really been very aggressive about dealing with domestic violence. I think it's also on the heels of Senator Montserrat's troubles and travails. I think that's the other thing, we really still don't know all the details around the conversation that Governor Patterson had with this woman. We still don't fully understand what the state police did. There's been confirmation that they reached out for this woman who was has alleged domestic abuse. It is clear that they had no jurisdiction there. This was an NYPD Bronx matter. So we really don't have enough information to pass judgment on it. And I guess the sooner that the Attorney General lays this out, the sooner we can move on to the next chapter.
Okay, I've got to move on to the next chapter, and it's called the state police.
Right.
Let's put all of this into an important historical context. You've been reporting on the history of the state police, and in particular on the report issued by Cuomo himself last fall on the conduct of the state police. So it's not like he's entirely removed from this subject.
Well, and it's problematic because when the report was requested by Governor Patterson, when Governor Patterson came into office, he had heard from other legislators that there was this widely held belief, I don't know if it was an urban myth, an Albany myth, that the state police were collecting information on political figures. We also have to understand that around the time that Governor Spitzer departed, there was a significant investigation into allegations that Preston Felton, the acting superintendent for Governor Spitzer, was involved with tracking the movements of Republican Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno and then leaking that information to the newspaper, so-called Troopergate. Everybody disagrees about what that means, but that was the setting and context. As a matter of fact, David Patterson disclosed his own issues around marital infidelities and drug abuse early on to try to get out ahead of what he thought the state police might have on him. What Cuomo came back with was devastating in terms of an analysis that showed that going back to Governor Pataki's tenure, Dan Weiss, who was the person who was a longtime confidant of Governor Pataki back from when he was a local political figure, had basically transformed the state police executive protection unit into this group of folks that protected the governor's image, not just his physical body. And so you had a situation that there was an investigation, a federal probe of linkages between Pataki campaign contributions and early release from jail and parole intervention. There were convictions in the case, but clearly Weiss got himself involved in that and helped spin that investigation according to Cuomo's report. Evidently, Weiss continued a relationship with Governor Spitzer and was able to have a role, and this is where it gets surreal, in running the State Police Executive Protection Unit from his new job at the New York State Power Authority. Now, evidently, he didn't want to answer questions about it, and information he had on this BlackBerry and documents, according to Cuomo, disappeared. Add in the mix that Preston Felton, the acting superintendent, didn't want to talk to Cuomo's investigators. And then we have also David S. Mack, who was a political contributor to Pataki, who actually was given the third highest-ranking job in the state police, even though he, you know, wasn't a law enforcement professional. And he didn't want to talk about it. He took the Fifth Amendment as well. Now, for some reason, Attorney General Cuomo left this all flapping in the breeze since September. Now, I'm thinking to myself, if you've got a problem with folks that are off the reservation, you need to have a compliance moment with them and explain to the Executive Protection Unit that they have a responsibility to protect the integrity of the governor's office and the laws of the state of New York, and at the same time protecting the governor. Unfortunately, because of the fact the way Spitzer left, there's a lot of questions that never answered about the Executive Protection Unit. For instance, where were they when he went off and did his period of time with prostitutes? Did they know about it? So there's so many questions, and people just resign. And in New York, we don't want to ask any more questions after that. Well, he's resigned. He's suffered enough. So we still have these huge questions about the state police during Spitzer's time.
But we did have the resignation last week of the state police superintendent,
Mr.
Harry
Corbett.
So is that a start?
That's not a resignation. Oh, no. We need to get all these folks in the Klieg lights of a Mullen commission under oath, and that includes the former governor. And that, if he, quite frankly, if he wants to do a rebirth,
former governor Spitzer,
absolutely. I think he owes it to the people of New York. I know he's reinventing himself, and all the producers want to get him on, but everybody should have a certain kind of approach that, Governor Spitzer, we'd love to have you on to talk about how bad Wall Street is, but first, can we clear up this matter about the misuse of the State Police Protective Unit? Were they really stupid, and you gave them the slip, or were they in on it?
Well, you heard it here first. There's the invitation. All right. Bob, there's so many other questions I have for you, and I'm sure I'll have a chance to ask them. If not right here at the microphone, right out there in the newsroom when the show is over. Okay. Thank you so much, Bob Henley. Bob has been reporting on so many other things, and we're going to have many, many opportunities, but most recently on the Patterson story for us. And you can hear his piece on the rocky history of the state police at our website, WMYC.org. You can click on the Brian Lehrer Show for the full reporting on that. Bob, thanks for joining us. And I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, Slate Magazine is trying to gather tips from you for energy efficiency. They need your help. We'll be right back in a minute.